Sometimes I don't know why. And time seems to go by so fast. In the twinkling of an eye. Let's enjoy it while we can.
Let's enjoy it while we can.
Help me share my love.
The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop looking out over London.
Good night and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
All right. Well, we made it to a Friday, another week in the books. So we'll take what we can get. And not only that, we're trying to keep a positive attitude today because, well, the skinny repeal bill went down last night. Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski, and John McCain. Who would have thought? Actually, if you were watching TV during the middle of the day yesterday, there was a press conference, and it was McCain and, of course, his friend Lindsey Graham. It was Ron Johnson of Wisconsin and Cassidy. I think his first name's Dan, but I'm not positive. Cassidy of Louisiana. And the four of them were talking about how awful this skinny repeal bill was and basically how if what they were worried about was that that this bill, if it passed, could then go to the House, be voted on, passed, and sent to the president's desk. And as we know, Trump will sign anything. He's like Mikey. He likes it. He just wants to put his name on it. And he would sign it. And so I've got some audio of it, because, you know, I got the feeling after listening to it that John McCain was going to do the right thing. But boy, Lindsey Graham was the one who was most definitive in his statements. Here's some of what he said at that press conference yesterday.
The skinny bill as policy is a disaster.
Yeah.
The skinny bill as a replacement for Obamacare is a fraud.
Yeah.
The skinny bill is a vehicle to get in conference to find a replacement. It is not a replacement in of itself. The policy is terrible because you eliminate the individual employer mandate, which we all want eliminated, but we actually have a overall solution to the problem of Obamacare. So you're going to have increased premiums, and most of Obamacare stays in place if the skinny bill becomes law.
Yeah.
Not only do we not replace Obamacare, we politically own the collapse of health care. I'd rather get out of the way and let it collapse than have a half-ass approach where it is now our problem.
Right. And then he kept going.
I need assurances from the Speaker of the House and his team that if I vote for the skinny bill, it will not become the final product.
Mm-hmm.
It will be the vehicle to have a conference between the House and Senate where we can consider a true replacement. If I don't get those assurances, I'm a no, because I'm not going to vote for a pig in a poke. And I'm not going to tell people back in South Carolina that this product actually replaces Obamacare, because it does not. It is a fraud.
So you got to wonder what happened to Lindsey Graham, because he voted for the pig in a poke, right? So when I saw Lindsey Graham voted yes, I got a little worried. I was awake. Yes, I was awake at 1:30 to 3 o'clock in the morning last night. But after Lindsey Graham voted yes, I did get worried, because obviously Ron Johnson voted yes. Cassidy voted yes. When I heard Murkowski say no, I got a glimmer of hope. My heart fluttered just a little bit, right? And then I was thinking back, you know, there were all kinds of things. They were showing, I was watching on C-SPAN, and the camera showed, you could see John McCain huddling with a bunch of Democrats, but you can't hear what they're saying. And the picture is not good enough to even try to read lips, even if I could. My eyesight's not good enough at this advanced age. Anyway, but I was thinking back to what John McCain said, both when he returned to the Senate earlier in the week and cast his vote to allow for the motion to proceed, which seemed at odds with his vote, right? And what he said at that press conference yesterday.
We can't make the same mistake that we inflicted in 2009. We've got to have some bipartisanship. We've got to have Republicans and Democrats sit down together and come up with a bill that gets a majority in both houses. Otherwise, we're going to see this continuous gridlock. When we passed Obamacare, it split us. It split us dramatically, and it split us for years. It's time we sat down together and came up with a piece of legislation that addresses this issue.
So I want to know what you think. You know, I know when after Dump was elected, the Democrats, a lot of the resistance crowd, had a mantra, and that was to block everything, to do just what the Republicans did to the Democrats for the last 8 years, which was be the obstructionist. It's so unbelievable hearing Mitch McConnell and Donald Trump decry that all the Democrats know is obstruction. Because that's what they did for 8 years. It was Mitch McConnell who said, you know, that he had one legislative goal, and that was to make Obama a one-term president. Remember that? For 8 years, they obstructed every single thing the Democrats did. Everything. And so, you know, for them to complain that the Democrats, you know, pushed through, and this was one of John McCain's lines as well. Well, his problem was that the Democrats pushed through the Affordable Care Act with only Democratic votes. Well, first of all, they had 60, so they didn't try to do it under reconciliation, which only needed 51. And like the Republicans did. And it wasn't written in secret. This bill, the skinny bill, you know, at this time yesterday, still nobody knew what they were going to be voting on. They knew that they were going to be voting on it at some point during the night. They weren't sure when, but at some point during the night, it was going to be voted on, but nobody had yet seen it because it was just still being written. It was reportedly finalized over lunch. Yes, a bill that that is responsible for 1/6 of the economy. They finished it up at lunch, you know, over lunch, putting the final details on it. They released it at 10 p.m. And then I believe the voting started on this bill shortly after 1 a.m. So, you know, these people, these senators were all voting for something that they hadn't read. And but what they knew of it, they knew that they didn't want it to pass. So what they were voting on was, as you heard mostly Lindsey Graham saying in there, they wanted to make sure that Paul Ryan would give them assurances that that the House wouldn't just vote on it and pass it and send it to the president's desk. I guess the assurances weren't good enough for John McCain, and for that we can thank him. And I do thank him. I thank him for doing the right thing last night. Now, he could have done the right thing, you know, earlier in the week and not let it go to proceed to debate. But you know what? Beggars can't be choosers. I'm glad with the outcome that we have today. However, I don't rest easily. I know my pre-show, my set of pre-show music was very positive. We ended with Van Morrison's Bright Side of the Road. And we should all feel good today, certainly better than we did yesterday. You know, I'm in sort of a weird place because it was a year ago. I told you it was a year ago Tuesday that I got my diagnosis of lung cancer. So I've been going back through my Fuck Cancer blog. You can find it at NicoleSandler.com/ I think it's FK-cancer, but there's a big banner right there. If you click on it, it'll bring you to the blog. And if you go all the way down, I think there's 4 pages worth. There's not that much there because I wasn't very prolific as I was going through it all. But it was a year ago today that I had my first brain MRI because lung cancer likes to spread to the brain. Me and John McCain. Thankfully, all we found in my brain was what they believe is a meningioma, which is a benign, smallish tumor that many people have, not most people, but they say on an autopsy, they find about 15% of the public has a benign meningioma, but it's something we're going to have to keep an eye on, you know, for the rest of my life. Hello. Yes, I have a brain tumor. You know, but it's one of those things that for the last certainly few months, more than any other time, I had been worrying that come next year, I wouldn't be able to get the test that I need to make sure that I'm remain cancer free. I'm supposed to have quarterly CAT scans and a brain MRI every 6 months. Hopefully soon that'll go to a year. So now I rest a little easier momentarily anyway. The Freedom Caucus in the House is talking like they still want to have a conference committee, even though there's no bill to conference on. You know, this is only 6 months into Donald Trump's, hopefully, knock on laminate, one and only term as president. But he's not going to give up, although he did say something. Oh, I wonder if I don't know where I put it. Apparently, Donald Trump is speaking this afternoon on Long Island, doing a thing about gangs again. He is encouraging police officers to get brutal, to use more force when putting suspects into their paddy wagons. He really did. He also suggested that that human trafficking is at its worst point ever in the history of the world. How did we get to this point? You know, that's the question that I'm going to be asking our guest today. Dave Johnson will be with us. We had a nice email exchange in which he wrote to me, "I've been thinking about all the things that have gone wrong to lead to Trump and what we need to do if we get past Trump, if we live through it. All the institutions that have failed, the norms that have slipped, the corruption that has been growing, the attacks on democracy. How do we fix it all after Trump? And my other question is, how do we survive it for the next 3.5 years? It seems every day there's another outrage. So we have a moment of feeling good, but we can't let our guard down because this was a victory. The skinny bill is dead, and the efforts to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act for the moment are done. They have to move on to something else. But don't forget, it was dead in the House before they zombieized it and brought it back. Right? It was dead in the House, and then they brought it back, and all of a sudden it passed. So I put nothing past these people, but they have today, supposedly, I didn't watch C-SPAN today. I had enough of it last night. They were going to move on to the NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act, to fund the military, because, you know, we need that. So, and then they are going to go on their August recess. By the way, John McCain headed home to, Arizona to undergo treatment for his brain cancer. He says he will return after, after the August recess. There's one thing I want to share with you, and I'm not going to get now into the whole, Scaramucci thing. Maybe when Dave is here, if he wants to talk about it. Look, I have a potty mouth. I can curse and say fuck with the best of them. But wow, I'm not the White House communications director, and I would never suggest that somebody try to, do to himself what Scaramucci said, Steve Bannon, was doing to himself in the Oval Office, or I guess in his own office, not the Oval Office. We are living in some kind of alternate universe where nothing makes sense. But I want to go back to the skinny repeal. David Dayen is one of my favorite journalists out there, and he writes for everybody. He's, I guess, a freelancer, and you see him everywhere from The Nation to Salon to New Republic. I mean, you see him everywhere. And he has a newsletter that you should really, subscribe to. I'll try to find the link and put it in my blog at NicoleSandler.com. Anyway, he wrote a thing in his newsletter today about this sort of unsung hero of last night's vote. And I want to share it with you. It's kind of short. Here's what he wrote. Everyone on the left who came of age during Bush v. Gore has had to put up with the insufferable punditry about John McCain maverick. Last night, he actually lived up to it, though he overshadowed Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski, and 48 Democrats who never wavered. But I'll stand up for the other major player of the evening, the other obstacle to ACA repeal, the media. Mitch McConnell failed in finding consensus on health care policy weeks, maybe months ago. He figured out that his only path to success lay in nobody knowing quite what was going on. He kept his fellow senators in the dark and, to the end, maintained that the bill they passed didn't matter as a bill. This made information a commodity, and congressional reporters filled that gap. When moderate Republicans saw reports of the skinny repeal gambit of using the conference committee to push through a bill worse than they ever wanted and forcing them to take it or leave it, they grumbled. When McConnell changed tactics and said a vote for the skinny repeal was a vote for conference and that it could never pass as a bill, reporters got the information that the House was getting ready to vote on it the moment they could. This was extremely narrowcast reporting. Senators were hearing from reporters directly. It created outlandish headlines like Senate Republicans hope their own Obamacare repeal won't become law. It added to the absurdity of the process, and it was just enough for John McCain to opt out rather than go quietly. Reporters seriously played a public policy role. Democrats knew it. Every speech they gave on the Senate floor sounded like it was coming from political analysts, bringing in new information about the consequences of passing the bill. In a process where Republicans counted on mystery, democracy didn't die in darkness. Really good points made there by David Dayen. Again, if you're on his mailing list, I think it's, you know, it's one of those tiny letter things. I will find it. I'll put the information on my blog so you can you know, subscribe, because he includes a lot of really good information, including links to all of his articles, and he is quite the prolific writer. You know, Trump also, he's had a bad couple of days, although to hear him or the mooch, you would never, ever believe it. The executive, the chief scout executive, the head of the Boy Scouts, actually finally wrote a letter of apology regarding Trump's indoctrination of the scouts last week at the Boy Scout Jamboree. You know, think back. Remember when there was some school somewhere where kids sang a song about the president? The president happened to be Obama. And Republicans, Fox so-called news, was screaming, indoctrination, indoctrination. When on the first day of school, Obama wanted to address the school children of America to talk about the importance of staying in school. People kept their kids home. There was like threats of violence. People were screaming indoctrination. Yet Donald Trump gets up there tries to indoctrinate the Boy Scouts.
Who the hell wants to speak about politics when I'm in front of the Boy Scouts? Right? The Scouts believe in putting America first.
Okay, that could go, you know, either way, but how chilling is the rest of this?
You know, I go to Washington and I see all these politicians and I see the swamp and it's not a good place. In fact, today I said we ought to change it from the word swamp to the word cesspool or perhaps to the word sewer.
Aye.
But it's not good. By the way, just a question. Did President Obama ever come to a jamboree?
No, but President Obama was a Boy Scout, and you weren't. You creep. You megalomaniac, maniacal creep.
Boy Scout values are American values, and great Boy Scouts become great, great Americans. As the Scout law says, a Scout is trustworthy. Loyal. We could use some more loyalty, I will tell you that.
Reference
Do you remember that incredible night with the maps?
Oh, my God.
And the Republicans are red and the Democrats are blue. And that map was so red, it was unbelievable. And they didn't know what to say. And hopefully he's going to get the votes tomorrow to start our path toward killing this horrible thing known as Obamacare that's really hurting us. So he better get them. Oh, he better. Otherwise, I'll say, Tom, you're fired.
You know, you can almost tell where he goes off script. He goes back to his rally speeches, and he's just so turned on by a crowd. It doesn't matter if they're a crowd of Boy Scouts. Those are actual, you know, his equals, his mental equals, you know, 12, 13, 14-year-old kids. But anyway, the Boy Scouts, Chief Scout Executive Michael Serbow sent a letter. He said, I want to extend my sincere apologies to those in our scouting family who were offended by the political rhetoric that was inserted into the jamboree. That was never our intent. He said, for our scouting family at home not able to see the real moments of scouting, we know that the past few days have been overshadowed by the remarks offered by the President of the United States. He said the invitation to the sitting president to visit the jamboree is a longstanding tradition dating back to 1937. But then, quote, it is in no way an endorsement of any person, party, or policies. For years, people have called upon us to take a position on political issues, and we have steadfastly remained nonpartisan and refused to comment on political matters. We sincerely regret that politics were inserted into the scouting program. While we live in a challenging time in a country divided along political lines, the focus of scouting remains the same today as every day. And that's something that Donald Trump will never get. Asked about it at the yesterday's briefing, this is what Sarah Huckabee Sanders said.
About the Boy Scouts. Chief wrote this to family members who were at the president's events earlier this week. I want to extend my sincere apologies to those in our scouting family who were offended by the political rhetoric that was inserted into the jamboree. That was never our intent. We sincerely regret that politics were inserted into the scouting program. Does the president owe the Boy Scouts an apology?
I was at that event and I saw nothing but roughly 40 to 45,000 Boy Scouts cheering the president on throughout his remarks.
Yeah.
And I think they were pretty excited that he was there and
point being,
happy to hear him speak to them.
But the head of the Boy Scouts,
unreal.
There is a problem. A lot of parents have expressed frustration in the wake of those comments. And felt the need to actually write a letter about it. So does the president owe an apology?
Again, I was at that event and heard nothing but a lot of cheering and probably one of the most energetic crowds I've seen in front of the president. And so I don't have anything to add. I haven't seen the statement
of young
from the
Boy Scouts,
so I can't comment any further than what I saw firsthand. And that was a lot of individuals, roughly 40 to 45,000 as reported, cheering the president on.
It was a big crowd, the biggest crowd of Boy Scouts ever. And they cheered on the president. So what could be wrong? They liked him. They cheered him on. It doesn't make what he did right. And again, you go back to the Republicans, those fucking hypocrites who said Obama wanted to talk to school kids about the importance of staying in school and studying and learning. And that's indoctrination. But this shit stain goes in front of 45,000 Boy Scouts and has them boo the former president, boo the former first lady and secretary of state. That is not patriotic. That's abysmal. That's sickening. That's sick. There's something seriously wrong with that man. So the question is, how do we get through the next 4 years and beyond? Do we recover from this? And how the hell did we get here? To paraphrase the talking heads. Those are just some of the questions we will. And thank you. Mad as hell in the chat room says, Nicole, what about Trump not going to the NAACP national conference after being invited 2 years in a row? He was invited last year as a candidate and he opted not to go. And this year as president and he opted not to go. There's an assault on civil rights going on, too. And Jeff Sessions, doesn't matter how much he is demeaned by this president, he takes a licking and keeps on ticking. He was on Fox last night with Tucker Carlson.
You've seen the president's criticism of you. Do you think it's fair?
Well, it's kind of hurtful, but the president of the United States is a strong leader.
Oh, yeah.
He is determined to move this country in the direction he believes it needs to go to make us great again.
Right.
And he has had a lot of criticisms, and he's steadfastly determined to get his job done, and he wants all of us to do our jobs, and that's what I intend to do.
But he doesn't want you to do your job, you poor little sorry man. But, you know, stand tough, Jeff, because you got to stand tough because he can't pick a recess appointment attorney general to fill your seat while Congress is out on August recess. We'll cover all that in What's News, and we'll come back on the other side and ponder our future with Dave Johnson next. Don't go away. I'm Nicole Sandler, NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
At 1:29 Friday morning, Senator John McCain walked back onto the Senate floor and motioned a thumbs down to the clerk. Voting against the so-called skinny repeal bill that would have repealed key parts of the Affordable Care Act, causing millions of Americans to lose their health care. Instead, the senator from Arizona joined Senator Susan Collins of Maine and Lisa Murkowski of Alaska in voting no, killing the Republican efforts to kill Obamacare in a 51-49 vote.
Senate Republicans have failed to pass their scaled-down plan to repeal parts of Obamacare. It was Senator John McCain who cast that decisive vote against the so-called skinny repeal bill, joining Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski, making the final vote 51-49. Vice President Mike Pence had been huddling with McCain prior to his vote, but when the senator entered the chamber, he gave a thumbs down gesture and voted no to the bill. And you could hear an audible gasp in the chamber shortly after the vote failed. President Trump tweeted, three Republicans and 48 Democrats let the American people down. As I said from the beginning, let Obamacare implode, then deal. Watch. The failed vote came just hours after the text of the latest version of the bill was released with no clear steps for what comes next.
Earlier in the day at a press conference, McCain, Lindsey Graham, and two others voiced their concerns about sending a bill to the House that they didn't believe should ever become law.
The skinny bill as policy is a disaster. The skinny bill as a replacement for Obamacare is a fraud. The skinny bill is a vehicle to get in conference to find a replacement. It is not a replacement in of itself. The policy is terrible because you eliminate the individual employer mandate, which we all want eliminated, but we actually have a overall solution to the problem of Obamacare. So you're going to have increased premiums, and most of Obamacare stays in place if the skinny bill becomes law. Not only do we not replace Obamacare, we politically own the collapse of health care. I'd rather get out of the way and let it collapse than have a half-ass approach where it is now our problem.
Despite those strong words, Graham voted yes.
We can't make the same mistake that we inflicted in 2009. We've got to have some bipartisanship. We've got to have Republicans and Democrats sit down together and come up with a bill that gets a majority in both houses. Otherwise, we're going to see this continuous gridlock. When we passed Obamacare in 2009, it split us dramatically, and it split us for years. It's time we sat down together and came up with a piece of legislation that addresses this issue.
It remains to be seen if that can happen. The final text of the bill was reportedly written over lunch on Thursday and released at 10 p.m. The vote began soon after 1 a.m. Friday morning. Following the vote, Mitch McConnell sounded dejected.
This is clearly a disappointing moment. We worked hard, and everybody on this side can certainly attest to the fact that we worked really hard to try to develop a consensus for a better way forward. So, yes, this is a disappointment indeed. Now, imagine many of our colleagues on the other side are celebrating, probably pretty happy about all this, but the American people are hurting and they need relief. Our only regret is that we didn't achieve what we had hoped to accomplish.
Chuck Schumer responded.
I would say to my dear friend, the majority leader, we are not celebrating. We are relieved. But as I said over and over again, Obamacare was hardly perfect. It did a lot of good things, but it needs improvement. So let's turn the page and work together to improve our health care system.
Before adjourning for the night, or morning, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said that on Friday, the Senate would be back in session to take up the National Defense Authorization Act, or NDAA. While cable news should have been covering the health care drama unfolding on the Senate floor, much of it was preoccupied with a profane New Yorker interview coming from incoming White House Communications Director Anthony Scaramucci.
Anthony Scaramucci was angry that word of his private dinner with the president and Sean Hannity and others was leaked. He suspected Reince Priebus. He was also angry about what he thought was a leak of his financial disclosure form, which actually is meant for public disclosure. Ryan Lizza of The New Yorker got a call from Scaramucci, and Scaramucci used language so barnyard we can't repeat some of it.
Meanwhile, the president is still reportedly mulling over the idea of using a recess appointment to replace Jeff Sessions, as he's been prolific in his criticisms of the attorney general and his decision to recuse himself from the Russia investigation. The speculation has Trump appointing a new attorney general who'd be willing to fire special counsel Robert Mueller. Lindsey Graham says he's introducing legislation to stop that from happening.
I'm working on legislation that I will introduce next week with Republicans and some Democrats. I think get all the Democrats. I hope I get a good number of Republicans that will say the following. A special counsel cannot be fired when they were impaneled to investigate the president or his team unless you have judicial review of the firing. Not just for Trump, but for any future president. We need a check and balance here.
And that's a bit of What's News for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these What's News reports, I hope you'll check out The Nicole Sandler Show and consider a contribution. My work is 100% listener funded, and I can't do it without you. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com/donate.
This is a huge, huge issue.
And we're talking about it. The Nicole Sandler Show on Progressive Voices and NicoleSandler.com.
Olson Johnson is right. I say we stay and fight it out.
Dr. Samuel Johnson's right about Olson Johnson's being right. And I'm not giving up my ice cream parlor that I built with these two hands for nothing or nobody.
Howard Johnson is right.
The latest in a long line of Johnsons who were right. Correct. It's Dave Johnson on the Nicole Sandler Show.
All right. You can find my friend Dave Johnson at the Center for Media and Democracy at exposedbycmd.org and also blogging at seeingtheforest.com on the Twitters at DC Johnson. Hello, Dave Johnson.
Hi, Nicole. So happy to be here.
Well, so happy to have you here.
I got to say, after listening to the news there, everyone I know who follows the news isn't sure why, but they've been running around late for the whole last week going, won't you do the fandango?
Yeah, you mean, wait, hold on. I got it for you right here. Sing along.
I see a little silhouette of a man. Scaramouche, Scaramouche, will you do the fandango? Thunderbolts and lightning, very, very frightening me.
Yeah, I've been, it's
yeah,
going
it's also
through.
The week's also been very, very frightening. I keep interrupting you.
It's fine. It's truly frightening. Everything about it, no matter where you look. You know, I keep saying, it's an old joke by now because I've been saying it all week. The one thing that Donald Trump has said that he didn't lie about was your head will spin. My head is spinning. Hasn't stopped. I used to do music radio, and there was a joke about some record labels that they'd keep releasing record after record after record, and they'd throw so much shit against the wall and just saw what stuck, right? That's what this is like. Yep. There's so much out there, and I guess a lot of it is diversion, so they don't want you to concentrate on what with the Russia investigation or, follow the money. But there's so much, and as somebody who follows the news for a living, or trying to make a living. It's impossible to keep up with it all, and it's very stress-inducing.
Really, really. Some people call it the fire hose of lies, that there's just so many lies. It comes at you like a fire hose. What do you do? How do you start refuting one, and then you got to refute 10 more. It's when you realize they're just lying is that when you can start to overcome that fire hose of lies.
But it's not
lie.
But it's not only, the lies are just unbelievable. This Scaramucci guy is he's mini Trump. He is his mini me. He is his mini me. I mean, they lie with such impunity. But I don't know if you saw any of Trump's speech that he gave today in Long Island, talking about ostensibly about gangs. But I was following it just on Twitter. He claimed, hold on, I've got some notes here that I was pulling off of Twitter. He claimed that human trafficking is worse now maybe than ever in the history of the world.
Well, actually, this new thing they're talking about, this new this Salvadoran gang group, I've got to tell you, this is worse than Hitler. This is worse than anything we've ever encountered in the history of the world, and we have to stop everything we're doing and get rid of all of everything and immediately focus on this. Or wait, that was Iraq.
Human trafficking is worse now, maybe than ever in the history of the world. I'm quoting. I guess he, forgets about slavery. Whether you want to talk about our good old homespun American slavery, or you can go back to Egyptian times. I mean, to say that, it just shows what little grasp he's got on history. Then, he was talking about the gangs. He advocated for police violence, encouraging cops to be, quote, rough, putting criminals into the paddy wagon.
It's like the fire hose again. It's like if you focus on any of it, I mean, that's this week's Hitler, this month's Hitler. There's always someone worse than Hitler that we have to go after. But the fire hose, and here we are, we're caught in the fire hose. Well, wait a minute, they're not the worst, et cetera, et cetera. It's just, it's a mind-bending kind of a thing that's going on, I think. And it's so obvious that, okay, now we got a new enemy we have to be really scared of, right? It's not Saddam. Weren't we supposed to be really scared of North Korea? That was 2 weeks ago.
Well, we still are.
See,
they
you know,
they
working?
Fired another missile today that I guess fell down near Japan. I am scared of North Korea too. But the problem is, I don't think we have anyone at the State Department who knows what the hell they're doing. Although I was encouraged last night that there was a warning from the State Department saying that all nationals should get out of Venezuela ahead of their rewriting the Constitution or something, and it's going to get dangerous down there. I'm thanking goodness that there was somebody at the State Department who even thought to issue that advisory.
Right. Even Tillerson, he said he's taking some time off. Right. It overwhelms you. Back to healthcare for a second.
Yes.
So I was thinking about, you know, this healthcare. How scared were we? I mean, it really came down to last night. You know, how scared were we? You know what we're scared of? Think about this a minute. We're scared that that the thing we're so afraid of, it could go back to the way it was before Obamacare.
Yes.
And there's something to realize of Obamacare, as bad as it is, you know. I mean, really, it's not. There's so much they could have done. Obamacare is the old Republican plan.
Yes, it is.
But
it came out of the Heritage Foundation.
Yeah, and look at the fight it took just to get that. And what that shows, I mean, we're just afraid that it'll go back to the way it was, where these giant corporations had even more power over us in the healthcare. You couldn't get health insurance unless you had an employer, or you were young and not sick or whatever.
Right.
You know, all those things. And then when you got sick, they'd say, oh, look, you had acne when you were a kid, so you're actually not insured. Fuck you. Oh, I'm sorry. I know this is
you can say
Nicole
that.
Sandler, so
yes.
I can't talk like that.
You can talk like
and
that.
They'd find reasons to not cover you. Find reasons. But they wouldn't give you all the money you paid them back.
Of course
either,
not.
But, you know.
No, they'd keep it all.
So we're all so afraid that it would just go back to the way it was. And it just shows the power they have over the economy and over us, that it was such a fight just to get here. And now we're in this huge fight and we're terrified of going back to the way it was, which illustrates how bad it was. But that also illustrates to me how bad so many other things are right now, you know, that could be fixed. But just a few years ago, we were in this situation with healthcare where we're just desperate to try to get something for we the people, you know, something sane.
Right.
Something, you know, like every other country has, you know, sane countries that have actual democracy.
Every other democracy on the planet. Right.
So look at Europe for a second. You get mandatory 5-6 weeks vacation a year. You get pensions. You know, there's so many things that other countries have that we don't have, you know, and it's because of the difference in the amount of how much we, the people, actually are able to do versus how much these giant corporations have control, or now, you know, a few oligarchs have control and basically control what we do for their profit while they get richer and richer. And it just becomes more and more clear. I'm babbling on, but,
but
I just wanted to say, it occurred to me, wait a minute, what we're so afraid of. And all we're really afraid of is that it'll just go back to the way it was. So I want to say a thank you to Obamacare, at least, you know, to recognize as much as it wasn't the greatest thing in the world, look at the difference it made. And the fear we feel is how much difference it made.
Well, what it made in difference in my life is it saved my life. Because before Obamacare, I couldn't get insurance because I was, you know, I was 50-ish. With pre-existing conditions. I mean, I just, you know, I've been battling lung cancer, but I had
You're not over 30.
Right. I had a melanoma about 10 years ago. So I was a cancer survivor before the lung cancer. So, you know, there's my pre-existing condition. And I've had people write to me, oh, you could have gone in the high risk pool. Yeah. And the money that I make, I don't think so. And that's the problem.
Yeah.
So the only reason I had health insurance last year was because of Obamacare, because of the Affordable Care Act. And to be honest with you, I have been terrified. Now, my fear is not assuaged. I'm still afraid that they're going to keep trying. This is only 6 months into what's a 4-year term, and I don't believe they're going to give up. But I'm momentarily relieved, just momentarily relieved. Now, here's the question for you, Dave Johnson. John McCain talked a good game. Chuck Schumer talked a good game. A lot of the senators, apparently last night on the floor of the Senate, were talking, okay, now we're going to work together. When Trump won, there was the call from a lot of people on the left saying, we're going to be just like the Republicans were. We're going to be obstructionists. We're going to not work with them on anything. We're going to say no to everything. I don't think that's the way to go. What is the way forward here?
Well, I know it's a real dilemma, isn't it? It's like, okay, so suppose we fight and fight and fight and get that. Remember the overtime rule that got stopped? The overtime rule was that if you make what, $27,000, if you make more than that, they can make you work 60 hours a week and not pay you a dime more than that $27,000 and make you work.
Right.
And they were going to raise that to 40 some thousand, 42 or something.
Right.
That's huge. That's huge. And that would mean millions of people get either a huge raise or don't have to work more than 40 hours a week. So do we let Trump get credit by letting that go into effect now?
I don't care who gets credit. I don't care who. Call it Trump Care. Don't make minor fixes and fix, you know, don't repeal Obamacare. Fix what's broken about it. Shore up the exchanges. Put in a public option and call it whatever the fuck you want. I don't care who gets credit. I just want people not to die because they're taking away our health care.
I agree completely. But the other side of that dilemma is then Trump is locked in.
Right.
And his people are locked in, and all the other ways that they're undermining our lives are locked in. That's what I'm scared of. That's kind of why I stopped writing about trade, too. Okay, so yeah, there's so much that if they were to work together, there's so many things they could do to make Obamacare even incrementally better.
But the thing is, you know, they're still trotting out the lies. Let's go back to the fire hose of lies. All they've been saying is, the Democrats wouldn't work with us. The Democrats were never invited to the table. First of all, it was 13 guys or less. 13 white guys or fewer who actually wrote this thing. There were no women involved.
Wouldn't work with them to kill Obamacare, right?
Right. And not that they were ever asked, you know, work with us on coming up with some kind of fix or do anything. They were never, it was never even an option. And to the point where they went, said, we're going to do this using reconciliation. So all we need are 50 votes. But then they're blaming it on the Democrats for not working with them. Well, they were never invited to work with you.
I know. They'll just say whatever they have to say.
Gaslighting.
It's almost hilarious. But here's the thing. The Republicans, for the current batch, you know, these insane, wild, whatever you want to call them, they need government to fail. They need it to fail. So they have to make it fail. And then they can say, look, government doesn't work. Hand it over to the corporations and the oligarchs. They need everything about government to look bad and fail. And we have to help get that word back out that, hey, you know what? Government's all you've got. You know, if you don't have government, then you go back to what we had, for example, before Obamacare.
How about government is of, by, and for the people? You know, they seem to forget that. Yeah, that's what we should be. And so if it's the people, how can it be bad?
Almost everything about the way we live now that is better than when people were groveling in the dirt comes from government. It's not like those were things that were going to be nicely handed over by the extremely wealthy and powerful just, you know, to be nice. No, the people had to band together and take back some ability to have some control over their lives and make rules. And that's what government is. That's all government is. It's in a democracy. Government is we get together and we protect ourselves from the rich and powerful. And that is why this huge anti-government drumbeat that we just have been hearing for how long, you know, an inch by inch. This is something I've been thinking about a lot is how could we possibly have ended up with a Trump? And you look back, look at all of the ways that government's been attacked. All of the ways that everybody's faith in institutions and everything else, you know, mine, yours, we're all like, oh, the CIA is lurking in the shadows. You know, all these things that inch by inch chipped away at people's faith in their own government, in democracy, sometimes with reason, oftentimes without. But all of the institutions of our society, all of the the norms that, you know, eroded, the rule of law that eroded. You know, we didn't prosecute a single banker for the collapse. You know, you just can go back. You go back. Nixon was pardoned by Ford. You go back and you see all of these little things that incrementally we allowed, chipped away, and here we are with Trump.
I know.
As a result. It's not, Trump doesn't come out of nowhere. I mean, remember, the Republicans blocked a Supreme Court justice.
For a year. Yeah.
Blocked it. Wouldn't even give him a hearing.
Yep.
That's as far out of any norm as anything Trump's doing.
And yet they're calling the Democrats the obstructionists. As if the last 8 years didn't happen, which is, this goes back to the gaslighting. It's, they're telling us the sky is green, the sky is green. And I'm looking up and I'm like, no, it's blue. But they keep telling us it's green. And a good chunk of America is saying the sky is green because this president says it's green. And he's right because he's the best and he knows what he's talking about because he was this great businessman.
And it works. See, it works for them. They look where they are. They're about to pass this tax reform, or they're going to try. And all it is this huge, huge cuts to the rich and powerful and corporations.
And you think back.
Huge cuts.
You think back to when we were just youngins and before, and the tax rate was much higher. And you know what? We had a great middle class. People on all ends of the economic spectrum were doing okay. And that, you know, that's the argument they have against, you know, all the European nations, all the other democracies in the world that have single payer healthcare systems. And I hate the term single payer. It's Medicare for all, basically. That's what they have in the rest of the civilized world.
Yeah.
Because yes, you would have to pay more in taxes. Right. You would, but that would cover your health insurance. It would cover your pension. It would cut, you know, yes, you may pay into it now, but you get it all back. And then some.
Infrastructure, environmental protection, parks, all those things, you know, but healthcare, and you pay more in taxes, but wait a minute, right now you pay more, you and I, we pay tons more. We pay a cable bill because we don't have a strong government.
That's right.
We pay, you know, all of these things we have to pay, and we still pay high deductibles for insurance. All, you know, when you say you pay more, no, you don't pay more. You pay more in taxes. And you pay a lot less for everything.
Everything else, right? And so it's just it's just you're paying it to this one place that's going to pay your insurance premiums. That's going to pay out money when you retire. That's going to give you some stability when you're a senior citizen, so that you know you're not going to have to eat cat food. It's money that it's like it's going into a savings account for you, but. They don't trust people, you know, they don't trust the people that are the government to handle that, which is really sad. And there's been such a disinformation campaign, you know, I call it propaganda. Yeah. And for all, again, going back to gaslighting, this, all the talk of fake news, we've had fake news for about at least a decade, and it's called Fox. And that's, you know, that's our state-run TV. That is our, you know, that's Trump's TV. And they use it to further his agenda.
You know, I spend time reading right-wing sites, listening to right-wing radio, watching Fox. I even used to have a job where the contract for Media Matters, where I would actually get up really early in the morning and look over all the stuff going on the right-wing blogs and right-wing media, and then write a little morning newsletter that they would send out about what's coming. And I got to say that in the last several years, you know, there used to be some, maybe a little bit of sense of truth here and there. But good Lord, now it's gone so far over the rails. It's all about Obama started ISIS in order to destroy the country and kill your children so that Kenyan Muslim babies can take over the country and eat your dog or whatever. You know,
and the president of the United States goes before 40,000 Boy Scouts and has them boo the former president and the former first lady and secretary of state.
Yep.
And that's okay?
Yep. So the health care, I mean, God, we beat it by one vote. Think how horrible that is that there were that many Republicans, all of them, but was it three?
Three.
Two women and McCain, right.
Right. It was Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski, and McCain. And then the reports are there were at least 9 or 10 who were relieved and happy that it went down this way, but they were too scared to do the right thing. Instead, they'd vote for a bill that they were petrified the House would bring up and vote on and put on the president's desk because they knew it was a piece of shit.
Yep. And this bill that they say is a government takeover, the Obamacare government takeover, all these horrible things. Don't forget, it was the Republican plan initially, which is how we ended up with it as an alternative to just giving Medicare for all. So the corporations forced us to have that.
Yeah.
And now, that's government, a little bit of government, right? Oh, yeah. I'm in shock.
Right. So
here we are.
We
and
go
here
back
we are
to
with Trump.
How did we get here? That's how we got here. We got here because of Fox. And now I have a talking head song, you know, Life During Wartime.
Well look how Fox, did we look, get how, look where Fox came from. Go back a little further. We used to have a thing called the Fairness Doctrine.
Yes.
You know, it used to be that it was considered that these broadcast medium, you know, never mind cable for a minute, but the idea was that we, the people, owned the airwaves. And so we would allow a private company to exploit those airwaves, to mine them, whatever you want to call it, to develop them for us rather than just have a BBC ourselves,
right,
like they do in England. We allowed private corporations to use our airwaves and make a little bit of money. But the rules used to be, you know, that you could not commercialize it too much. And you could only commercialize it at all in certain hours, and you had to provide information for our democracy, fair, balanced news and information for democracy. You had to provide educational programming.
Yep.
There were all these rules.
Yep.
You had to limit how many commercials you could put on the air. And even when you could put them on the air in prime time, you couldn't put more than, I think it was a total of 4 minutes of commercials on. And all these rules, you know, because it was our airwaves. And we require, if you're going to go ahead and do this, well, this is what we require of you.
Right. And broadcast channels, radio or television, were licensed to operate in the public interest, convenience, and necessity.
They were required to be in the public interest.
It had to be. And they had to have a public file that people could come in and look at. This new Trump FCC is doing away with the public file.
But the bigger picture, too, corporations in general were required. They exist to serve
the public interest.
I mean, corporations are just a legal package of laws.
Yep.
You know, that's all they are. They're just contracts. Why would we, the people, ever allow these things to exist except in the public interest? Not to make a huge profit. They don't exist to make a profit. They exist to serve a purpose that we want them to serve. Like building a factory can take a lot of money. And how do you, one person can't just build a factory. So they set up a structure where a bunch of people could invest money, build a factory for our good. And then, you know, they'd get a return. They used to limit legally the amount of return you could get on an investment.
Yes.
And they used to tax the profits quite a bit, et cetera. They do this for us. We used to require that things like that be in our interest. That aggregation of power and wealth and money that these corporations allowed got stolen away from us and used to that aggregated power and wealth then took over. It's called captured our system, and here we are.
Right. So in the 2 minutes we have left, Dave Johnson, how do we survive this? I'm struggling to get through one day at a time. I feel like an alcoholic here.
If we survive it, the guy still has nukes.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah. Sorry. But, yeah. There. That made everybody happy. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So okay. Really. Yeah. I mean, are the Democrats the answer? They have to be. It's the only feasible way out.
I think the answer is slightly deeper. The Democrats, by the way, are getting a lot better at understanding a lot of what's happening.
I hope so.
I think the answer is that we have to expose. We have to start understanding what's happened to us. I think that's the first part, is really understanding. It's, first of all, it's not just Trump. Trump comes out of something that's been building. Trump comes out of these erosions of law, erosions of norms. We allowed Ford to get away with pardoning Nixon. We allowed, you know, there's things that we allowed. We used to put people in jail for corporate crime.
Mm-hmm.
Inch by inch, so many, we used to require corporations to be existing only in the public interest.
Yep.
We forgot what democracy is. We forgot that we are supposed to be the boss of them, that we're supposed to have the power. This anti-democracy, anytime you hear any of these right-wing anti-government, you're hearing anti-democracy. You're saying we need to change. They're saying that they want to change the system
right.
to where it's run by corporations. And we didn't recognize that that was what they're really saying. And we have to get that back. We have to understand our own power as a democracy. It might be gone. It might be too late. It might be Putin time, you know, but because of what's happening so harshly, I think a lot of people are seeing this. That
yeah, I hope
what we
I
need
hope
to
so.
Do is re-explain democracy.
Well, and people need to register to vote, and they need to start preparing now to make sure they have all the IDs they need, whatever they need to be able to vote in 2018 and beyond. It's never too early because it could be too late. With that, Dave Johnson, we are just out of time. People can find Dave Johnson at seeingtheforest.com, exposedbycmd.org, on Twitter at DC Johnson. I was hoping we'd go into the weekend feeling a little better, but, we still have last night. I got
Downer
you.
Downer Dave.
Thank you, Dave Johnson. I'll talk to you later.
Thank you.
Bye. All right. With that, we are done. Have a wonderful weekend. I will return Tuesday with Gotta Laugh to go over whatever happens in the next 4 days. Stay sane and, you know, take pleasure in what happened last night. Have a great weekend, everyone. Thanks for listening.